Last time when we met, we talked about when is the Aquarian Age, and we did a little bit of physics and astronomy and things like that. We're going to do something very different tonight, and this talk is basically the introduction to the whole series of the talks. It points at what we're trying to get at, and that is changes of consciousness and changes in society and even physical changes as we pass through the various ages. And so the name of the talk for tonight is The Holy Grail and the Aquarian Age in Heaven and in Earth. Now, normally when we think about the Holy Grail, we have different kinds of pictures than the type we're going to have this evening. We hear about swords and about cups and knights in armor, and we hear all about Sir Launcelot and Sir Bors and Percival and, of course, the invincible Sir Galahad. There's a lot of adventure, and there are many perilous quests, and the cup is very elusive. In fact, it's very interesting to even look at the myth at all, because the continental version of the myth, the quest is for the cup, whereas the British version of the myth, the quest is for the sword, so, or the spear. So it's a totally different point of view. But at any rate, if you've ever read the stories on La Morte d'Arthur, there are all kinds of confusions, and some knights fight against their own friends, not even knowing who they are. There are visions from heaven, and ultimately there is the consummation of the Grail, after which the Grail cup is taken into heaven. In this talk, we're going to deviate from the traditional pictures, some of them anyway, and we're going to interpret in terms of modern consciousness and in terms of the evolution of consciousness, the whole ideal of the Grail only relative to our history, which is what we're trying to get at. For us, we're not going to be talking about knights errant. We're going to be talking about our humanity, especially those of our humanity that are seeking the higher life, that are on an inner quest and are trying to raise their consciousness. So we're especially going to be looking at ourselves in that regard. The visions we're going to look at are indeed visions from heaven. And you might take this, it's awfully beat up from years of use, but just pass it around, and this is our textbook for tonight. It is one version of the constellations in the heavens, and just take a look at it and pass it on, and that is where our visions are going to come from. We may talk about inner heavens as well, spiritual worlds, but this is not a particularly esoteric talk, nor is the whole series particularly esoteric. Now, Max Heindel tells us something that has been in the mystery traditions going as far back as we can carry them into India, and that is that the stories of initiation are the stories of the constellations, and that by taking various arcs through the constellations, you can find the stories of the changes in consciousness one must go through to reach realization, spiritual awakening. So we're going to look at a pictorial evolution. Now the cup that we're looking at is the cup of receptive consciousness. It is where wherein we receive the divine nectar. Usually it is portrayed esoterically as a human being seeing with the clairvoyant eye. The human being is like a cup of fire, that the fire rises up the spine, and at about the voice box, it spreads out something like a tulip. And that is like what the Grail cup is like. On the other hand, there is spiritual influence of the highest type that comes down through the roof of the brain and brings illumination to the consciousness in the cranium. Both of those views unite at the voice box or at the Grail cup or at the bottom of the Grail cup. The quests that we're going to do are going to be high adventure quests, and the quest for us is going to be process. The process of evolution, the process of the development of consciousness. And the whole idea of process is a very Aquarian idea in itself. Last time when we spoke about people in the mysteries and the start of the zodiac, we said that the beginning of the zodiac was at a point somewhere between Aries and Pisces, and that the equinoctial point passed over that at about 496 AD, 498 AD, somewhere in there. And that was agreed upon by Madame Blavatsky and Tycho de Brahe and the Babylonians and just about everyone else. So that brings the beginning of the orb of influence of the Aquarian Age to be about the mid-19th century. Now, the first cup for us is the cup of experience. For us, and in terms of evolutionary process altogether, we usually experience material conditions first, and we usually create forms in material conditions, and that gives us soul power. It's sort of like from the experience we have the ability to understand the meaning. In evolution, this takes place quite a bit. A very good example, at least for me in my life, when I was a young man, I used to smoke a great deal. I smoked something like 3 packages of cigarettes a day, which I was almost never seen without a cigarette. And when it came time to quit, being a rather mental individual, all of those mental things came to mind. Well, why do you smoke in the first place? And you get involved in all kinds of personal analysis and everything like that. And while you're analyzing, you're smoking. And what happens is, if you have the experience first, the meaning comes later. That doesn't mean we should go out and do all kinds of crazy experiences just to have experiences. But sure enough, when I did quit smoking, I began to understand very clearly all of the psychological reasons why I had been smoking in the first place. So things come to the material world before they come to the spiritual world. They're known in the spiritual world, but they are not made public until they have been made materially public first. So in the middle of the 19th century, we have two figures that brought the idea of process to human consciousness in a way that it had never been brought before. And those two figures were Charles Darwin, who was an Aquarius, and Karl Marx, who was not an Aquarius. Karl Marx talked about the process of history. You might say it would be accurate to say that he was a rehashing of Hegel, and that maybe Hegel had it before him, but those are little details. And obviously, Charles Darwin brought process and the idea of process to all sorts of fields, biology and geology, and all of the things where process is very, very important. After the world had been introduced to the form side of process, then it was ready for the spiritual side. And it's not surprising that after Marx and Darwin, Madame Blavatsky came along, Max Heindel, Rudolf Steiner, all of the people that started teaching spiritual evolution. It is as if the first having experienced something in a way that was indubitable in the material way, that people were then ready to receive the same information in a spiritual way. So what we're talking about is process. And process is very important to the spiritual life. Because in the spiritual life, it is not like the material life where you have some end or that you have some goal and you go to attain that goal and that becomes the all. In the spiritual life, the ends are right within the means. You cannot know the ultimate truth, and it doesn't come to you at the very end of things. You learn the ultimate truth in the living of it. So the quality of your life and the attention of your consciousness given to your life and the process of it is the way enlightenment comes. It's not like you just go through experiences and then you become enlightened. It is the way you're living all along that the enlightenment comes along the way. So it's the leaves are falling now, and we can talk about things autumnal, such as the great pumpkin. That is, what is the pumpkin? Now, it would vary from biologist or botanist to botanist of how you tell what a pumpkin is. Some people say you tell that a pumpkin is a pumpkin by the seeds. And others say, no, it's by the leaves. One species is differentiated from another species by its leaves. And then there's another whole school of biology that contends with the leaf people that believes that you tell one species from another by the flower. So you have the seed, you put it in the ground, and the sprout comes out, and the little rootlets go down into the ground, and it puts out shoots and leaves, and eventually somewhere down the line, flowers come. And those flowers get pollinated, and eventually the great pumpkin grows. Now, what is the great pumpkin? Some people believe that the great pumpkin is only the fruit at the end, even more than the seeds that the fruit contains. The reality is that the pumpkin is all of the stages of process from seed to seed. We are, in our lives, we are the whole process. We can't say that we were what we were when we were 27 years old. That's when we were really ourselves. And if we're now old and decrepit, or if we are babies that are infantile and can't do anything, we can't say that those aren't us. Because what we are now is a consequence of the whole process. I had a big awakening in that regard, because I was stunned a few years ago about what I had become. And I was surprised because it wasn't anything I would have predicted. But when I look back the other direction, I can see that I couldn't become anything other than what I did become by the choices that I made and the things that I did. So when we're talking about the great pumpkin, we're talking about the whole process. And in a way, we're talking about the whole family of cucurbits, the cucurbicae. Or we're talking about the entire vegetable kingdom. See, when we're talking about a process, it's very difficult to separate one thing in isolation from everything else. We can't do that because everything is part of everything and everything is in everything. And so that's the kind of thinking that it behooves us to establish in our consciousness if we want to grow spiritually. We have to understand that there are processes. Things may change according to events. Like the chemistry, the plant certainly changes when it goes into a flowering state. It's that kind of thing. All right, now we're ready to start on our way. That's enough introductions for a while. In Greek mythology, we have the river Lethe. And the river Lethe was the river of forgetfulness. Anytime you drank from the river Lethe, you forgot all of your life that you had here on earth. Lethe was one of those many rivers that ran into the underworld. There were quite a few. I used to think there were only five, but I think I'm up to about seven in counting. In fact, it is part of Greek language that the word for truth has as its root lethal or Lethe. Aletheia, which means without forgetfulness, is the word for truth in the Greek language. And that is, if we are in that consciousness where we never forget ourselves, that is, we never forget the source of intuition that comes through us, then we are in truth. If anybody here is named Alice, it's a matter of fact that the name Alice or Alicia are from that same source. If we look in Northern European mythology, especially as portrayed in Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle, in the last drama, he called them musical dramas, there is the cup of remembrance. And Siegfried the hero drinks from the cup of remembrance and he remembers everything from the spiritual worlds. So there are actually two cups. There's the cup of forgetfulness and the cup of remembrance. But both of those two cups function in opposition within themselves. When you die, you forget this world, and you are alive and awake to the other world. When you come to birth, you forget the spiritual worlds, and you wake up and are alive to here. If we look in St. John's Gospel, we find there are also two cups. Or two jars. The first miracle of Jesus was at the marriage at Cana, in which he changed water to wine. The last cup is the cup of the Last Supper, the cup of communion, which clairvoyants claim was water. In the pictorial zodiac, now this is a reversed pictorial zodiac. This is the solstitial collier, and this is the equinoctial collier, and this is the solstitial. This is the Virgin laying on her back, as virgins are wont to do. And she has a stalk, she has stalks of grain in her hand. But south of the Virgin, toward the South Pole, is the constellation of Crater. The other cup is the cup of Aquarius, the pitcher that the waterman carries on his shoulder. In some versions, it's on his hip. And so what we're going to be discussing, we're going to be discussing the two cups, the cup of the Virgin, which it was often pictured as much as an angel as it was pictured as a virgin. If you wanted to, we could look at all of the Orphic version of all of this with the back hats and things like that. And the second cup was the cup of Ganymede, the water bearer. And it is in Aquarius. And Aquarius in cosmological astrology, which is very different than what we're looking at right now, Aquarius rules the ethers and the etheric stuff and the angels that live in the ethers. So they are the marking points of where we are going to run our quests. We're going to run our quests between the two cups. Now, this can be done in two different ways. We can go forward in the zodiac from Virgo through Libra through Scorpio and on to Aquarius, or we can go backwards through the zodiac and come to Aquarius from the other direction. Being a greedy man, I want to do both directions. And being doubly greedy, I want to look at both directions twice. If we go forward through the zodiac, through following the regular orbital revolution of the Earth around the Sun, we get the pictures of the seasons and all of that. That gives us a mythological view. It gives us a story view. It gives us the pictures that are the stories out of which history is made. If we take the apparent backwards movement of the solstitial point through the constellations of the sidereal zodiac, we get the backward movement, we get a directly historical view of things. So we're going to try to do both of them. Now, when we do all of this, it's going to be just like the quests of the knights. It might get a little bit confusing, and things will be all jumbled up. And, of course, I'll have to go out on tangents once in a while. And, you know, it's like that. If you get into spiritual worlds, you can get lost very easily because there's so much going on there. And what we're doing is certainly going to be anything but exhaustive. Only exhausting to me, but not exhaustive. We're just going to look at a very, very few little snippets here and there. If you want more, you'll just have to go and study for yourself, and there's plenty of it there. We are also not going to be exclusive. The way the symbols are interpreted, the spirit has many sides to it. And there are many valid interpretations. The Platonists had at least 7 interpretations for each myth. 4 very obvious ones. So if you hear a mythical interpretation in this and it disagrees with something you've heard before, it doesn't necessarily mean a contradiction. It means that we're looking at it from one point of view and that there are other points of view. What we're using is myths and pictures and things like that as receptacles to hold that very subtle and very elusive truth that is now it's there, now it isn't. And by looking at the symbol, you know, it's not the same thing as reading a blueprint. It's much, much more different than that. And in both of the times when we look at precessional history rather than symbolic transition through time, we will be using telescoped time. And by telescoped time, we will be using a constellation to indicate a period of time that may be as long as millions of years and not just the 2,156 years. That's about the average. We won't be using them and exclusively. And when we do, we will do it in such a way that I tell you that this is direct history. But the processional part is necessary to see how things proceed. Everything happens by analogy in the cosmos. An atom is like a solar system, is like a galaxy. That's a simple physical analogy. But everything in the spiritual worlds is even more so an analogy. That's where the Hermetic axiom, why it's called the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below, that is a principle of analogy that carries through all things. All right, we're ready to take our first quest. And the first quest will be pseudo-precessional. And what I'm going to say now is almost laughable, because what I'm going to talk about is millions and billions of years of time in a very few sentences. I want to talk about our solar system. And in our solar system, it has gone through various different stages. And it hasn't even always been a solar system. In most of the stages and in most of the time it's existed, the planets didn't exist. And even this matter didn't exist. We're talking about something pre-Big Bang. The Big Bang is a theory that is used by material science to trace the material source of the universe back to a common point in time and space. But that's only the skin. And it's a skin that hasn't always been here. But there has been a spiritual evolution long before there has been the stuff that is now the stuff of the galaxies, before there was even the energy that forms the plasma of most stars. There was an evolution, or a creation that had an evolutionary form would probably be the better way of it, because it is always creative. In our solar system, there are four periods of time that we have gone through, and there are three more yet to come. In the first of those periods, which is called the Saturn period, and it was a time of, when we're talking about periods, we're talking about time. And time is a potential that is filled by consciousness. And it is there for producing attitudes. Within that Saturn period, there were globes of matter, the globes being, or worlds being, potential, space being the potential in which matter can become manifest, different kinds of matter, not only this matter, but matter that's made out of emotion and desire. And the globes, or the matter, was for evolving consciousness through producing forms. And then there are all sorts of revolutions of consciousness into and out of matter and viewing things from different points of view. So in terms of periods of time, there was the Saturn period, which is associated with Saturn. And in the Saturn period, we who are now human beings were mineral-like, meaning to say we were capable of being formed. Other than that, previous to that, we had no form whatsoever. And we had the deep unconsciousness that is similar to the consciousness of our present minerals, very, very deeply asleep. After passing through a long evolution, along came the Sun period. When everything in the Saturn period was recapitulated, only it was now deeper in matter. And instead of being only as dense as a thought, the whole cosmos was as dense as a desire. And it was illumined with the light that we now see in the desire world, which some call the astral world. It was a world of feeling. And at that time, we passed through a plant-like state, after which there was another rest, and then the cosmos became more materialized, and it became as dense as energy. You could call it, I suppose, a plasma if you like, but it was more like a vital, living energy. Most of our concepts of energy that we have now from science are only energy when it's dying, because it has been killed from the source that keeps it integral. Everything that is done with energy is subject to the second law of thermodynamics, and that's energy going into entropy. That's energy going back into chaos. That's not energy that is whole and total. That's neither here nor there. We get ourselves in. And in this moon period, the third period, we were animal-like. We are now in the fourth period, during which we have become human-like. At least some of us have become human-like, and not all of us, unfortunately. And everything in this whole process, there are cycles within cycles within cycles. So we pass through many, many repetitions. And elementary education is like that. In order to wake someone up, you have to hit them with the same thing over again and again and again. But it is from different points of view. And different points of view and different things are built into us when we are creature-like before we become human, which is a transition to becoming godlike, and we become creators instead of creatures. In that transition time, we as humans are awakening all of the things that have been built into us. So, just in this revolution, one of seven, in this earth period, just in this revolution, in this earth period, it is broken up into periods of time that are called epochs. A little different than the way it's used geologically. And the epoch that is a recapitulation of the Saturn period and the mineral-like conditions is when we were mineral-like human beings. You can say that is associated with Virgo. We have just a simple point-like physical body, a single cell body, and a relationship between the body, physical body, which began in the Saturn period when it was no more dense than the mind, and coming into becoming the physical body now in the age of Virgo in a mental time. Now, when we say the age of Virgo, we're talking telescope time. We're talking millions of years. The next period is called Hyperborea, the next epoch. And that is like the sun period. And we pass through an energetic state, an etheric-like state, and we recapitulated everything before coming into the physical world. The moon then, Lemuria, then represents Cancer, a recapitulation of an animal-like existence. When we had the motivation, like our current animals have, to move and do things. Plants are rooted. They are planted. They cannot do that. Yeah, I know some algae float around and some of them have a little bit of motility, but that's not enough. And the state, the next epoch, is called Atlantis. And that represents the first half of the Earth period. This is when human beings become erect. In Lemuria, The sexes had already been separated in preparation for coming into this material world. Because when we are in this material world and things are as formed as solidly as they are now, the capacity to reproduce oneself from oneself is lost, especially when we bring self-consciousness in and all of the regalia that has to go with it in order to have continued existence with great sophistication. So we cooperate with the opposite sex to produce new bodies. So we, in Atlantean period, we become erect and we begin to have the mind, which is what separates us from the animal-like state. And through the mind, the spirit, our being, our selfhood, our divinity can enter into the personality and see its creation outside of itself. Pretty big thing. Of course, when you have a divided consciousness between an inner and an outer consciousness, it is like Gemini. It is a lot of alternation, all of those things. You might say, looking at things in this way, in this very telescoped view, this is not linear time. In this very telescoped view, you could say that where we are right now is Taurus. We are now physically in this world. All right, having said that, we have gone as far as we're going with our first quest. And it wasn't very much of a quest. We didn't learn too much, but we can see what we are part of in a very, very grand sense, in a para-historical sense. You have to have the ability to read the memory of nature in order to be able to understand our development, our evolutionary development in this sense. All right, let's begin going the other direction. Let's begin again with the cup at Virgo, at crater. And this time, let's take a symbolic or a mythical view going forward. Now, it is a thing not only in Judeo-Christian mythology. We learn about a war in heaven. And Michael, or Michael, who is associated with Mercury, and the angels struggle with the dragon. And right underneath Virgo here, somebody's got the drawing, right underneath there is a dragon. It's a serpentine dragon. That there is that kind of struggling. And out of the crown of Michael, a jewel falls, and it falls to earth, and out of it, the Grail cup is formed. So we have both the story of the beast fighting with the angels, and we have the jewel falling to earth. You might say the jewel of consciousness being brought to incarnation, and that is the story there. Now this Virgo, now, mind you, we're being extremely, extremely rapid fire in this. We could spend on almost any part of this. We could have a whole series of lectures on them. But then you would have to be awfully brave knights to want to sit through that much tedious detail. This part of the zodiac that included Virgo and parts of Scorpio, if you look in very ancient Egyptian zodiacs, for example, used to be called Caduceus of Mercury. And it was called the Tree of Knowledge. And the bottomless pit, this is a flat surface, but on a spherical surface, this goes down toward the South Pole, which is the bottomless pit. And from that same mythological source that we learn about the Tree of Knowledge and the Caduceus of Mercury, we learn about people drinking of that first cup, and it was the cup of wine, the cup of Bacchic frenzy, and a cup of forgetfulness of the heavenly home. In other quests, it was the cup of the lotus eaters, the lotus eaters who forgot about their home altogether and didn't care whether they ever returned or not. They were content. That's one of the problems of the earth. We can be pretty content here. We can like it, you know. It's pleasant. I must admit, it's a constant temptation to me. I live on a small annuity from my profession, and it's a pleasant life. I don't have to go to the work and answer to anybody or anything like that. That's something that happens. From other stories, we learn of humans being in an Eden-like state and that we were born of the Word. And if any constellation and sign is word crazy, it's Virgo. We were pure. We were born without sex, you might say. We were born by the word that issued from the creative hierarchies. From still another source, if we take Virgil and the Aeneid, who just had his birthday yesterday, by the way, the angel was seen as the mentor that had the golden bough, and that is she led Virgil into the underworld, was always the mentor in that way. I've got a whole set of Sir James Fraser of the Golden Bough in there. If anybody wants to read tedious mythology, it's quite a thing to read through. And it is where people drank from the waters of Lethe. From yet other sources, this is the source of Helen, is Virgo, which in other places is called Della, or it's called Delilah, because when the sun passes through Virgo, it gets its hair shorn off. That is to say, the strength of the rays from the sun are weakened, and then it passes into the land of... It wasn't the Pharisees. What were they called? Myth of Samson and Delilah. All this memory business. What? Yeah, the Philistines. And that this is the land of the Philistines. This is Egypt, so to speak, going down into the lower worlds. And so it's all tied together in that fashion. So our nights following the sun are now passing out of Virgo, and the next thing that they pass into is Libra. They're crossing into the underworld. Anything in the winter half of the year is the underworld. It is a sign of love that they pass into. And in the symbolic sense, not in the cosmological sense, in the symbolical sense, to the ancient mysteries, Libra was the sign of the separation of the sexes. This is one of those things that you have to see what you're doing. And the separation of the sexes, after that, all culture happened through those who were, the leading way was through those who were reborn in feminine bodies, because they had the more receptive bodies. We have the ripening of the Adam's apple stuck in our throat, meaning to say the voice of power given to us to have speech, not necessarily creative speech, but that's on the way. Of course, in the original, it wasn't an apple that they ate, but it was a pomegranate. And the pomegranate was symbolic of the ovaries, and that little tube at the end was like the ovarian tube. And all of the seeds in the pomegranate were like the ova in the female creative mechanism. Mechanism, terrible word. It is the time of the birth of individuality. We become so shocked by our difference from somebody of the opposite sex that it awakens us into individuation. And it is a time where there has to be justice. There has to be a specialization of law because people see it from two different points of view. It is a time where there is balance or loss of balance. And it's a time where there's a loss of faithfulness. The initiates in ancient times, at this time of the year, at the autumnal equinox, used to face the rising sun, and in honor of the creation that came through women, would go Eva, Eva, Eva. And so that's where we are now with our knights. After that, the sun and the heroes that follow the sun enters into Scorpio. Different kind of angels here, the angels of discontent. Scorpio is the sign of the Lucifers, the sulfur-breathing beings, so to speak, that are pictured. And if you look on the roadmap that we have, it is the sign where there are all kinds of struggles with serpents and dragons. You have Ophiuchus, Vel, serpents, and then you have Heracles fighting with the Draco, the dragon, and you have those Stymphalian birds with the armored feathers that follow everything up when you before you can eat it or anything like that. So what we're talking about here is very scorpion in terms of following everything up. This is the time when the separation is carried to extreme. It's the time of rebellion. It's the time of passion. It's the time of extreme sexuality. And it leads to the second sin. It leads to the sin of Cain, the sin of violence. This is a martial sign. And so now our knights are now in the land of temptation. Our humanity has passed from a state of virgin purity to a state of love, but being divided among it within itself out of necessity, and now it has passed in its way into the state of where we think in our illusion that we can kill somebody. We can't. We can destroy the body, but we can't kill. Can't kill the spirit. From this point, the sun passes into Sagittarius, and it represents the human condition in full debauch. It's very carnal, it's very indulgent, it's very prodigal. It's almost subhuman and bestial. It's careless, it is fleshly to the extreme. It is a time where we increasingly need more of divine help. It's a time when we call on religion. It is a time when we give thanksgiving for what we still have. So our knights at that point pass into depravity. And then we come to an earth sign. We come to Capricorn. And that is the depth of our descent. It's the lowest place that we go. Everything is as it is now. Everything is hardened. We live in material blindness. And a different kind of evil has come in. The kind of evil that was associated with Scorpio was a kind of evil that is called Luciferic, where you're urged on to do things and where you have a passion and you carry things too far. This is the naysayer's kind of evil. No, don't do that. It is the sins of omission. They're extremely materialistic. They are sometimes even worldly wise in a way, but it is a kind of fear. It is a kind of self-limitation. It is a kind of darkness. This is where we are. We're blind to the spiritual worlds. Skepticism, Capricornian, Saturnian skepticism, is as far as it can go. We're in solitary confinement. We're in the dark. Madame Blavatsky claims that when we end the Aquarian period, we will be out of this period of darkness, which in the Orient is called the Kali Yuga. So let's leave our knights there. We'll leave them always in earthy places. And let's go back now and take up a precessional point of view. we will begin the processional point of view with telescoping. Only now, the last parts, especially the parts that deal with Taurus, Aries, Pisces, and Aquarius, we're going to deal with history. Now, it's a very important thing. It's a principle that is sometimes misunderstood. It's an Aquarian principle. If you look at the symbol of Aquarius, the two lightning strokes or the two waves are parallel to each other. And Aquarius has the conception or has the consciousness of seeing things in parallel. And seeing things in parallel is seeing something with the principle of analogy all at the same time. The whole principle that is a misprinciple by Carl Jung of synchronicity is a misunderstanding of parallelism. He wants to have the parallels with no connections, no vertical connections, no causal connections between the different realms, because if there were that, there would be magic. We all know there is no magic. Those are literally his words out of his book. Yes, things do happen synchronously with each other, but synchronicity is an idea that they are always parallel and that there never is any breakthrough between one parallel and another. So this is what we're going to be looking at. We want to look at parallels on different levels that we are working on. I had a friend once that used the force of her teacher to open up a clairvoyance. And she couldn't deal with the parallelism. The first thing, she couldn't deal with the dweller on the threshold. In the middle of summer, with every blanket in the house on her, she was in shivers, in fear that the monster was going to come through the wall at her. But the thing that eventually caused her to commit suicide was the fact that she couldn't deal with the parallels. She couldn't deal with the fact that some people, the way they appeared in the material world was not the way that they were on other levels of their being. And this is somebody that despised hypocrisy of all types. And she just couldn't live with the fact that people had so much hypocrisy about things. So what we're going to talk about is our evolution precessionally as we're trying to make our way from Virgo backward through the zodiac to Aquarius. We've already covered everything up to Taurus. Now we're going to go forward from Taurus. In fact, we're not even going to fill in a whole lot of that. And we're going to do this on a whole bunch of parallels. How are we doing for time here? We're not even an hour yet. We might get this in 90 minutes. Unbelievable. I didn't think that was possible. First, let's look at it in terms of the evolution of form. Let's follow what evolution does. Let's take the outer form and see how it evolves. Now, we can even go further back for that. We can go all the way back to like Lemuria. And in Lemuria, when we were being brought into this physical world, we were being brought into this physical world at the same time that the physical world itself was crystallizing. It was thrown off within the solar system, and it was a fireball in Lemuria. And as it cooled and condensed, we cooled and condensed. But mind you, in the same way that we were of the flexible energy before the physical bodies were condensed, it was much easier to accomplish evolutionary changes. And Cancer is a sign of imagination. And using the imagination is when the various internal organs were developed in the body that was beginning to crystallize or formulate out of energy. So the whole principle in Lemuria, the whole principle of imagination had its rule over our physical form. Now, when we were in our physical form in the early times of Atlantis, which we will symbolize again by Gemini, everything we lived under the mist, which was so heavy it was almost like water. And in order for us to come out into the clear air, we had to have lungs, which are ruled by Gemini. And mind you, this is the time that we were building the brain, so that the mind had a vehicle through which it could express itself in the physical body. And through the mind, the spirit could work into the brain and into the physical body. Now, this is this is the time that we became warm, red-blooded beings. It's, all of these things are in parallel. This is the sign of Orion, which is the sign of Nimrod, the hunter. And this is when we ate a lot of flesh. Previous to the fall, we were all vegetarian and we were told to be vegetarian. But after we fell, it became necessary to eat flesh to develop lungs so that we could breathe. Now the parallelism comes in that at the same time that we developed the ability to produce concrete thoughts, we are co-creators. And that went along with the precipitation of the denser atmosphere and what is called the flood of Noah, or the one of the three Atlantean floods. And so all of these things developed side by side. When we come to Taurus, we have begin to have conscious beings as human beings, and are no longer semi-animal beings as they were in Atlantis. Now in Atlantis, they could do remarkable things, but there was not ratiocination like as such as we have right now. And so Taurus represents, in terms of the physical development, it represents a passing of consciousness into the medulla. It is when we had a cunning kind of thing, when it became more like everyone for themselves, and it was basically a material type of consciousness. Passing to Aries, the brain develops, and we then are very clearly seeing the difference between the internal world and the external world. In the age of Pisces, the brain is much further developed, and part of the development is from eating fish. It isn't just a superstition about eating fish from the Catholic Church. The fish are high in phosphorus, and that's what it was needed for the internal illumination that people had. Reasoning process developed to a fairly high state. And we began to have a pineal kind of consciousness. We began to have intuitions. Now, as we come to Aquarius, eventually, in far distant future, we will not need a physical body such as we have now. But for now, it is still necessary, and it has to undergo evolution. Now, this is a little speculative, but Aquarius rules the circulation. And I happen to believe that there is no accident that there is the hole in the ozone layer, and that lots and lots of ultraviolet light are coming into our environment. And that if you go into South America and the far south, and especially in places like Australia, you find people having all the time having to have skin cancers cut off of them. If you take descriptions of the ethers from modern writers, like either Max Heindel or Rudolf Steiner, and you take them and you put them next to descriptions of ultraviolet light from physics, you find out they're extremely similar. Like most animals see in the etheric spectrum, which is the ultraviolet spectrum. And etheric clairvoyants claim that etheric vision does not pass through glass, just as ultraviolet does not pass through glass. And so what you have with the hole in the ozone layer and all the ultraviolet coming into our atmosphere, that's the way of the future. That is part, a physical part, of the New Jerusalem. And how do we counter it? We begin to counter it, probably it's going on now, but in the Aquarian Age. The highest concentration of ethers with any association in our physical body is in the blood. To a certain extent, the blood is almost a stream of ethers or etheric gas as much or more than it is a liquid. Therefore, if we have our own etheric field and it's radiating out, we're less vulnerable to being passively receptive to the radiation from without. So as a consequence, the circulatory system is going to move more and more toward the surface, toward the skin. And that means, because of the venous circulation, it means that everybody, irrespective of genetic background, is going to be blue. And if you look at the mythologies all around the world, they talk about the coming race of blue people. It has nothing to do with whether you have African heritage or Native American heritage. It has to do with evolving the ability to bring the circulation to the skin and ward off the effects if you are just too passive of the ultraviolet from without. All right. Let's look at the same thing all over again. Let's look at how consciousness is awakened and what kind of consciousness is awakened and what the religious evolution is. In Lemuria, which we're associating with Cancer, which is a sign of feeling, we were still coming into the physical world and we were much more internal. That's why we could evolve organs very quickly, because we had that imagination and we were still, in the early part, we were still sexually singular. And we could condense these organs within ourselves through the power of imagination. We could basically feel them into existence. But as we became more and more into the physical world, especially since we had chosen at the separation of the sexes to take the creative force into our own hands out of harmony with the cosmos, because of that fall, because of our now current exile into material blindness, where we can see only the material world, we had to develop sense perception. We had to really be incarnated. And this was done by feats of violence. That is, people were roasted on spits or were put through all kinds of experiences of pain. Pain, whatever, it was pro-evolutionary to experience pain. And to some extent, it was a religion of pain. We still have some vestiges of that yet in fights to the finish and things like that. In Gemini, the consciousness was awakened by repetitions. This is a pre-literate society. And by remembering things over again and again and again is the way we came to consciousness. Passing on to Taurus, it becomes a consciousness, we are now awake to things outside of us. Our values are outside of us. And that cunning was the cunning of desiring. I want this thing for myself. This was the time that we're now, now we're talking linear time. This was the time that people worshiped cattle, and a person was a great person by the number of cattle that they had. With the passage into Aries, it became the time of self-individuation, of separative interests. It became the religion, more or less, of the obvious, what is before me. But then the individual had to be balanced by the opposite, by the law, so that an individual, it wasn't just a religion of Thrasymachus where the might rules and where the stronger one is, the better one is. When we come to the age of Pisces, where we are now, it became, you know, what was a memory in Gemini became a focus on objects, and the discrimination of self from object is what took place in Aries. And now in Pisces, we have the idea of something. And so this is the consciousness of a universal idea. And God is an idea because we can't see it. So this is the time, the dark ages, for almost all people living in the world right now. It's a religion of blind faith. So it's all principle. Where we're trying to get to with Aquarius as our next step is awakening to seeing for ourselves. It's a kind of consciousness for beginning to see the forces that are behind the forms. We can see animals move. We can see people having different kinds of motivations that change things in the inner world, but we don't see them directly. We're talking here about an etheric vision. It is a consciousness of reopening to the inner worlds. And it is a consciousness on a higher parallel. It is a consciousness of infinites, not just principles, but infinites. Now let's do the whole thing all over again in a repetitive way, and let's look at the moral standards. Obviously, the moral standard for the age of Lemuria, which we are associating in a telescope fashion with Cancer, is whatever is good is that which produces an awareness. Whatever wakes us up, whether it's pain or what anything else, the sense of goodness. In Gemini, in that which we are saying in a telescope fashion rules Atlantis, whatever is good is what produces a memory. First we experience, and then we connect the experiences one with another through memory. And we're talking about a very ABCDarian development here. This is something that takes a long, long, long time. Even when we see in our animals who have a jump on us because they're learning this at an earlier stage in their evolution than we did, even with them, it takes a long time of repeating this. Gradually, when memory gets associated with the budding ability to think, even in a very cunning way, one begins to associate that there is a relationship between cause and consequence. So the moral standard of this time is what produces a memory, and that which produces a connection. Sort of like a telephone line is ruled by Gemini. Gradually, when we come to the age of Taurus, good is what gets me what I want. It gets me what I need. There's a lot of this that we still find lingering in the Old Testament. When people did try to go back and worship the golden calf. And good was whatever produced a reward. And people began to develop their moral standards, their values of things, by understanding that very principle of being obedient. You know, if you do what I tell you to do, you'll be rich and have long days. When we come to Aries, whatever works in harmony with law is what counts. This is, again, the whole religion and the whole morality is ruled from the opposite sign Libra, the sign of law. And the advanced religions of those times, this is what differentiated the religion of the ancient Jews from a lot of the other people at the same time, was the fact that they had a code of law. And it wasn't just put down and saying, this is what you do. It wasn't an arbitrary matter. Then, as we're being prepared to come out of matter again, in the age of Pisces, good is what one gets as a matter of sacrifice. If you sacrifice, especially on the basis of principle, you know, this is a Jupiterian sign and constellation. We're talking about the principle of something being good, something as being right. And therefore, if we sacrifice our personal individual needs to live by a principle, we have the beginnings of a higher life. It might only be in our ideational consciousness, but that's a pretty good place to start. Passing to the Aquarian age, it is the kind of consciousness of what is good for all. What is good for the whole. And what, you know, like humanity, will not, when we can see the connectedness of ourselves with everyone else in an altruism, which will be our property by the end of the Aquarian age, the individual then has to learn to adjust conduct away from the Aries type of consciousness of separation to adjusting individual actions with regard to the total of society. And that kind of civil society is what Aquarius represents. So this is what we are working toward. And it's pretty tough because, you know, in order to have gotten to the point that we can appreciate spiritual development, we have to be pretty highly individuated. All right. Let's look at the sense of self. In Lemuria, the sense of self was primarily with body. If I hurt, then I must be. In Atlantis, the sense of self is more associated with growing and becoming. This is the Atlanteans were like 30 feet tall. They grew physically. It was one of the problems then was a worship of body. In Taurus, a sense of self in desire. And when we became brain conscious people in the age of Aries, the sense of self was a self sense of self in mind. That person who was born right on the cusp between Pisces and Aries, René Descartes, I think, therefore I am, therefore I think I am, is a perfect example of passing from the age of Aries and moving into the age of Pisces. In the age of Pisces, we can know ourselves by the experience of the Holy Spirit. And the experience of the Holy Spirit is knowing ourselves as a self, which is an idea, which is an idea of a divine being that is conceived divinely. If you once had the experience of the Holy Spirit, you know you are divine. When we pass to the Aquarian age, which is where we're trying to get with all of these talks, we're getting to that Grail Cup eventually. I'm sorry, this is... I thought it would be a rather long talk. When we get to the Aquarian age, self will not be determined in relation to things that have lesser consciousness than us. It will not be determined by we're better than the animals. Because when we begin to open clairvoyance, we begin to see that we're not at the top of the evolutionary pyramid, we're somewhere down near the bottom. And especially in our higher spiritual consciousness, there's a parallelism that one does not come to awareness in the ethers as opposed to the physical plane without at the same time passing from consciousness in the mind to life spirit, which is beyond, which means the selfness out of which self is born. This is what altruism is. It is a realization that there is a spirit that is. And out of that spirit that is, it is capable of producing in itself different foci. And those different foci are the selves. But they are made up of that spirit. And when we have the consciousness of that spirit, our sense of self becomes very different. The perfect example in all religions has always been, like if you look in the Old Testament, or if you look in the mocking of it in some of the plays of Aristophanes, divinity has always been seen in form as a vortex, a pillar of fire or a vortex of fire by day, by night, and of smoke by day. And you might say that within an ocean that is selfness, our individualities are like little eddies in there, little whirlpools, and that our consciousness is about as vacuous as those whirlpools are. And in those little whirlpools, all of the clutter, you know, flotsam and jetsam, all collects in those eddies, and that's where our attention is focused in this world. But when we have the experience of the Christ, which is the experience of that selfness, it's given other names in other religions, doesn't make any difference what name you call it, it's the reality that counts, it is a shifting of consciousness from the vortex or from the eddy to the ocean itself. And this is a totally different kind of consciousness than the consciousness we have now. So if we're working toward Aquarian Age consciousness, this is what we're working toward. Let's look at how that consciousness is developed. In the times of Lemuria, we got willpower. All of our development was being worked on, either by imaginative forces that guided our imagination or in those things that produced extreme pain, the willpower to hold either the imagination or to withstand all of the pain and suffering was what the spiritual exercises were about. When we were coming into consciousness, especially in later Atlantis, the bringing of consciousness into our physical body, not so much from without, but by taking the without within ourselves and carrying it to within, it was the age of breathing exercises. People breathed, and in the process of breathing, they were bringing about the physiological changes at the same time that they were bringing about the changes of consciousness. You can do a lot of that right now. It's a little bit dangerous to mess with. But if you look at it, if you're very self-observant, you can see that there is a big difference in your consciousness on the in-breath than there is on the out-breath. Probably all of the best things that human beings do, such as singing and things like that, all take place on the out-breath. As things shift to the age of Taurus, and now we are in linear time again, it goes away from just breathing exercises to poetry. The exercises, like in very early Greek times, which were in the age of Taurus, people did, well, you know, like dactylic measure in poetry. The initiates of the school of Heracles would chant their poetry while they were pressing on their fingers, and this rhythmic understanding of beauty brought a consciousness out that was more full. It wasn't only just on the in-breath versus the out-breath and being schizophrenic in that kind of consciousness of being two different people. but through poetry, mind you now, the mind is coming in, it can understand more and more beautiful things. And so that is what the exercises were like. Now, in the age of Aries, it became more exercise, more of rectitude and of singular concentration. Aries always wants to be singular, it always wants to be one, and it always wants to be one all alone. And in a human being, that is the capacity to concentrate. Because only one person can concentrate within you. Only you can do that. And so the exercises in the age of Aries were the beginning of the exercises of extreme concentration. Not to say that in all these other periods there weren't very advanced people that couldn't do other, could do some of these things way ahead of everybody else. We're talking about most of the people who are becoming or trying to become wise as we are trying to become wise. Socrates, who was considered the wisest of all men, could stand on one foot all night while he was concentrating on a subject, and he was known to do so. And people even brought their mats out there and slept, and some watched, and all night long he concentrated. The exercises now in the age of Pisces are more abstract. They are more of understanding universals. They are of taking concentration, and from that concentration, understanding universals. As we come to the age of Aquarius, which is our goal, the exercises become more of the exercises of understanding pure truth itself. And we really become creators. Aquarius is ruled by Uranus, and Uranus is the preeminent of all of the planets, creator. And so as the Aquarian age comes on, the universe, even though we're talking about general principles here, these general principles are nice, but they're sort of like toys. And some people even worship those kinds of principles. What really counts is if you can creatively live them into existence. And that's what the exercises are going to be like in the future. We are going to take the truth and live it into existence. Pure awareness being brought into all the differentiations. In general, if we go way back, if we go back to Cancer, beginning at that time, we were still differentiating. And the end of that differentiation is in the age of Aries, when we are ones. And all of the religions that work on us to take us from large groupings of people to smaller groupings of people to smaller groupings of people are called religions of the Holy Spirit. With the age of Aries, we turn the corner so that now as we approach the Aquarian age, we are approaching the religion of the second attribute. You can call it the religion of Christ if you want, but it is a religion that is of a totally different order and a totally different kind of consciousness. Now, this is getting awfully long, so we're going to have to move on. We have one more quest to go, and we'll do that very quickly. And that's just to put us in touch with a few of the things that are going on around us. And this can be done by following Uranus as it goes forward through the signs of the zodiac. And as it goes through each sign, it brings out a different facet of the Aquarian consciousness. Like when it was in Virgo, which was between 1961 and 1968, was the beginning of the computer revolution. It was that universal truth knowledge of Aquarius was now possible through electronics to have a mass, huge amounts of data, and this is when the world changed quite significantly. After that, it went into Libra, and it was in Libra from 1968 to 1974. This was the beginning of going toward the universal oneness, where all of humanity is one together. And so what did we have? We had the beginning of bringing equality by the beginning of the modern women's movement. Also, it was the beginning of the whole sexual revolution. When it moved into Scorpio, 1974 to 1981, we had a more biological kind of consciousness. The birth without violence and the death with dignity, the movements were begun at that time. It was the time of the tax revolts. All of these scorpionic kinds of things, but all of them having to do with leading toward a future united humanity. In Uranus went through Sagittarius, it is when the electronics took a different thing about it. It sort of was like those debauched centaurs, and it still continues on, but it really had its beginning at this time. Electronic games. Remember Pac-Man and all of those kinds of things? And this is when the big battles start. In our times, they are when the battles between science and religion started. When it came to be in Capricorn, 1988 to 1995, something we can actually recognize as having lived through, this is when all of the... They're still active in town here. What is it called? The Earth Movements. You know what I'm calling about? Your friend Gary belongs to that. And the Ancient Earthworks Society is what it's called. And it is the time that that crystal clear consciousness of Aquarius, this is when all the people became crystal crazy. It's all right in society. It's, you know, there are some people that follow the fads instead of catching a glimmer of truth in the fad and being able to use that as a means to jump into the Aquarian consciousness in a large way. It was also the time of the, what would you call them, the Earth Children. The whole neo-paganism movement became very, very strong at that time. 1996 to 2003, Aquarius was where Uranus was. It is a time, beginning of an etheric awakening, but the way it worked out is that the beginning, remember, this is was just said that Aquarius is when we begin to realize that there is something greater than us. And much earlier in the talk, we said that cosmologically speaking, that Aquarius rules the angels. This is the period, just these, in those last few years back then, when all of the angel mania took place. Everybody was writing books about angels, and it just went on and on with that. Now, at our time, Uranus is in Pisces. And Pisces is a sign of vicissitudes. And so we've had these extreme vicissitudes like tsunamis, and we have had all the hurricanes. It's as if saying that the entrance of Uranus into Pisces is doing as much as it possibly can to break down a peaceful dependence on material existence. It gets right to the core of things. And the big thing right now in the New Agey kinds of movements is water. There's this man in Japan that has devices for showing the structure of water. And he shows that if you pray at the water and then use the devices and measure it, it has very pretty figures to it. Are you all familiar with that? Yeah. The way it all falls together is very, very clear. So that is our fourth and last quest. From the first quest, we were able to realize that there is a future epoch of man, of a humanity that goes beyond the separations that we have now, a Galilean type of humanity. in all of these quests, we converge on the second cup, the cup of the Last Supper. Interesting to note that on the mandala, Aquarius is pictured in the upper hemisphere, and where the Last Supper is, they're told to go where there is a man who has a pitcher of water, and it is celebrated in an upper room. And at that supper, everything becomes the religion of friendship, which is another kind of altruism. This is what we're headed for in all of our quests. And from the first quest, we realize that we'll be back at being one humanity again, but not one humanity that is held together from without by higher spiritual beings, but a humanity that is held together voluntarily in a sense of altruism, because each of us knows in ourselves that we are part of this, and we give ourselves to the one rather than trying to be separate. In the second quest, we made a descent into matter, and we saw the closing off of our being. But at the same time we saw the closing off of our being, we saw an increase in our negative appreciation of sensual things. And at the same time, we became more and more concentrated, probably the depth of concentration coming in Capricorn. And from the third quest, which was the major quest, we realized a number of things. We realized that we're passing from a time of ideas to a time of complete unity. That we're passing from a time of being intellectually enlightened to a true enlightenment. The light itself, and not the things that are made of the light or that issue from the light. We also learned that we're looking for a kind of morality where the good in itself, Aquarius is the sign of the thing in itself. In fact, that's even maybe one of the titles of one of these talks. And we're passing from a time of separate experience to a unified experience, where inner clairvoyance doesn't happen to us automatically, but it happens voluntarily, and it gets united with perception. And when our perception is carried into the realm of clairvoyance and receptivity and projectivity become one, then we have that holistic kind of consciousness that is associated with Aquarius. And we learned that we have a sense of self in something beyond ourself, which allows for humility, which allows us to be sane and healthy without the, how would you say it, the crazy qualities that come from too great a separation. And from all of these things in that third quest, we understood process. This is so important. It's process that we're in. In the last quest, we didn't learn much of anything. We learned that, yeah, it's working in our own times, but there wasn't anything special there. So we have the cup of virgin innocence, which becomes the second cup. It becomes the cup of transcendent virtue. When we drink of the knowledge, we do something right because we know. The first cup was a cup of forgetfulness and of drunken frenzy. And the cup of Aquarius, the water bearer very carefully has the water in control. He pours as much as he wants. It is that consciousness of Aquarius of being cool, calm, and collected. It is a kind of peace that we need to proceed forward in spirituality. The first cup was a cup that led to strife, and the second cup is a cup that leads to sacrifice and unity. The first cup was a cup of receiving, because we were still creatures. The second cup, the cup of Aquarius, is a cup of giving. We will have made a significant step of passing away from being creatures and being more toward being creators, givers. The first cup was a cup of seeking experience, and the second cup is a cup of finding it. The first cup was a cup of forgetfulness, and the second cup is a cup of remembrance. When we remember our divine estate, when we remember others, when we remember especially the source of intuition. Plato, who was a great Aquarian, in the Meno, when Socrates takes a boy through the proving of a theorem, he always asks the boy to remember not his life in Atlantis or anything like that. He asks him to remember himself, or to remember the truth that resides in him. When we do things wrong, how often do we say it? I forgot myself. Or when in the morning, when we resolve that today is the day I'm going to be perfect, how long is it before we forget ourselves? How long is it, if we have Christ as our ideal, how long do we keep Christ as our ideal before we forget? So we're talking about a cup of remembrance that is a perpetual remembrance. It is not a remembrance of images, it is a remembrance of a state of being. This do in remembrance of me. Next ones will not be so long. The next one will probably be about 45 minutes. I'm sorry, but I had to do this one long because it's that kind of a talk.